everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Crime and Coffee Couple. My name's Allison.
And my name's Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Al. I'm your husband.
You are my husband, yeah. And it's nice to have you here with me today.
What's new? Pussycat, whoa.
You know, just another weekend.
Yeah, it sure is. And we're coming to you with another true crime case here. And if you like us, or if you just want to help us out, you know, even if you don't like us, it's totally fine to go over to our YouTube page. You can see our faces. A lot of people saying that I look like what I sound like and you don't look like what you sound like.
Oh, I don't know if that's good or bad.
I don't know either. I'm going to assume good. Let's just assume good.
I'm going to assume bad. My mind always goes to the bad place.
They're like, yeah, man, I thought she'd be pretty, but unfortunately.
She is ugly as shit.
And they're like,
so if you want to see how ugly I am, just go over to YouTube and you'll see.
Maybe drop a comment. Tell her, lift her up a little bit. Be like, Allison, you're beautiful. You know, I don't care what anybody says. Check us out over there, or you know, leave us a review on any of the podcast platforms, whatever you got to do.
And our episode is dropping on St. Patty's Day. And since I'm 16% Irish, I'm rocking my green.
You sure are. And I found out, I mentioned today, and we were at our son's Little League game, I'm 2% Roma, which used to be known as Gypsy. I don't think Gypsy is politically correct anymore, but since I am Gypsy, I think I could say it, right?
I don't know. Maybe. With that small of a percentage, I don't think so.
2%? Okay,
yeah,
I guess
it's not good enough.
Yeah, I did the ancestry thing, and that's where we're getting these numbers from. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, what's been going on this week?
Just more slicing and dicing, more stitches.
Yeah, thanks for all the happy wishes to Allison. We get a lot of... Allison doesn't check our social media stuff. I try to protect her a little bit. You know?
I have a thin skin, and yeah. I don't like any kind of mean comments.
Well, nobody likes mean comments. Like, who does, right?
I know.
So if people leave stuff, I usually just delete it. So, yeah.
So thank you so much for all the well wishes. It has been a challenging couple weeks, I'd say. A week and a half.
For our new listeners out there, Allison's had some like skin cancer issues. So
yeah, so my ear was basically kind of reconstructed.
Yeah, it's nasty, man. You guys, we definitely should not share it, but it's not good.
Like, yeah.
If you could picture like Frankenstein on his neck, you know how there's like the stitches on his neck? That's basically what the top of your ear looks like with like no skin on top.
Yeah, and actually I'm putting my ear... What is this called? A headphones? The headphone is on my ear, which is a little precarious. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh, interesting. Because you did say it was feeling okay. And you're like 5 minutes in and now you're kind of trying to whistle a different tune.
And now I have some stitches on my back too. So it's the beginning of the end for us as a couple, because now we have to separate at nighttime. And Mike is in the guest bedroom. And this is where it all crumbles.
Yeah, I've kind of wanted this for a little while because I'm sick of hearing, oh, you snore. And it's like, well, I probably do. Actually, I did wake up myself up a couple times last night.
Then you know it's bad. So I can only sleep on my right side right now because my left ear is shot and then my back now has stitches. So that's a little tender. So I was like, Mike, I can't wear my earplugs and you snore. So we are going to have to separate for a couple weeks.
Yeah. And I'm certainly not going to lose any weight to stop that from happening. So I'm just going to be who I am. Nice and obese, clinically obese. And we'll just keep this party rolling.
So if we get a divorce, I don't know if we can be called the Crime and Coffee Couple anymore.
Yeah, sure we can. If we still do it together.
Well, I don't know if that would happen.
Would we still like do the podcast?
Yeah, we would still do the podcast.
Would you need me? You probably don't even need me. I'm just kind of sitting here.
No, I need you.
Are you sure? Why?
Yeah, you're important to me.
Why?
Because you're my sidekick.
Well, yeah, but like if we got divorced, that's the thing.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll face that ship when we get to it.
Yeah, you really wouldn't want to look at me or anything.
But Mike's really trying to like, oh, this is good now. We'll just keep the separate bedrooms. I'm like, that's not happening.
Well, here's the thing. It's not that I don't want to sleep near you or anything.
Sounds like that's exactly what it is.
I just feel that you're going to sleep better because, I mean, there's really nothing she can add anymore. She's got her... earplugs. She's got a sound machine, which I think I've lost some of my hearing thanks to the sound machine. She has like a eye mask. I think you tried like the thing that is an eye mask plus the Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah,
it
has the Bluetooth speakers.
You talked about that once. I haven't seen it. Personally, haven't seen it in a little while.
And so then that's money out the sound machine is like adhered to the headboard between the two of us.
Yeah, we should take a picture of that and show people. It's really ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Absolutely. And like, it's true.
I try to put a pillow on my right ear because it's right there.
Well, maybe if you stop snoring, we won't have to do that anymore.
And turn it all the way up. Like it's not even like I'll sneak and try to like turn it down a little bit.
Didn't you say there was some sort of apparatus you could put over your mouth so you don't snore?
Yeah, hostage tape.
Well, we're getting hostage tape.
Yeah, not until they sponsor this freaking podcast.
I'm going to be like, get in that bed. I'm putting this tape on your mouth.
Hey, hostage tape, if you want to sponsor the podcast to stop me from snoring, you're more than welcome.
So if you have nothing else to add, I think I'm ready to do this.
I never have anything of value to add.
So this is kind of an interesting case. This is the murder of Tom Merriman. Of course, it's sad because it ends in somebody dying. So within the peaceful, tranquil beachside community of Solana Beach, California, a shocking murder rattled the residents in December of 2020 when a 37-year-old woman murdered her 64-year-old stepfather.
Interesting.
So Jade Jenks was born on October 14th, 1983, to parents Jenny and Steve Jenks in Texas. When Jade was 10 years old, her parents divorced, and 2 years later, it was 1995, and her mom, Jenny, remarried a man, and this was 39-year-old Tom Merriman. So during the initial years of Jenny and Tom's marriage, Jade was not particularly close with Tom, but over time, they did begin to form a trusting and caring relationship. Jade eventually saw Tom as a trusted father figure in her life who she could rely on for support and guidance. In return, Tom treated Jade as if she were his own daughter. So 2 years after Jenny and Tom were married, they welcomed their son. This is Jade's half-brother, Cash, in 1997. And despite having different fathers, Cash and Jade developed a close sibling bond when they were young. So over the next decade, life would not be quite as smooth when the relationship between Jenny and Tom began to become more and more tumultuous. In 2002, when Jade was 19 years old, Tom filed for divorce from Jenny after he claimed that she had been increasingly violent and verbally abusive. Tom said that she had been abusing alcohol, possibly even meth, while Jenny accused Tom of using meth. So it was a he said, she said. Mm-hmm. So Jenny also indicated that Jade was using heroin at this time. Because she wasn't sober, her mom would not allow her to live under her roof. Mm-hmm. And then they said that during 2002 to 2008, Jenny and Tom actually divorced and remarried multiple times.
Ugh, that's not very stable.
Yeah. So despite the rifts between Jenny and Tom, Jade's relationship with her stepfather remained strong, and Tom would call Jade his daughter while Jade would call Tom her dad.
Nice.
And ultimately, Tom and Jenny did divorce and it was done. There was no more remarrying. So as time went on, Tom began to struggle with addictions with both alcohol and sleeping pills. In 2013, Tom opened Encinitas Butterfly Farms, which is a nonprofit organization that focused on the conservation and study of the native butterflies, where he served as the co-founder. And then in April of 2020, during the height of the COVID pandemic, Jade decided to move into the house next door to Tom so that she could be there to kind of keep an eye out for him as he dealt with his various issues of substance abuse. And for many years, Jade served as the caregiver for her stepdad, basically coming in and helping out if he needed to get to a doctor's appointment, yada, yada.
Do you know if Jade kept in touch with her mom?
They didn't say.
Okay.
So they lived on a quiet street less than a mile from the ocean on Nardo Avenue. And one of Tom and Jade's neighbors, this is Ramona Hamilton, she saw that Tom and Jade had a bond. She invited Tom over for dinner one evening. He explained, I always eat dinner with my daughter, Jade. She helps take care of me. She does the cooking. She cooks dinner for us each night. So Ramona knew Jade also because Jade was an interior decorator who had done some work in Ramona's apartment. So now we're moving on to December 15th, 2020, and 64-year-old Tom had a bad fall at home. He ended up being admitted to Scripps Hospital in Encinitas, California. He was hospitalized for about 2 weeks at that point.
Okay. And as a reminder, this is the time that December 2020 when Tom dies.
Yes. So Tom's life is coming to an end at this point. So he's sent to the hospital. On top of the fact that he had suffered this injury from falling, he was also being treated for alcohol withdrawal during his hospital stay. We see a lot of that in the hospital. I work in a hospital, if you're new to this podcast. And if people aren't honest with the doctors, they are going to go through withdrawal because they're not drinking as they normally are. So the doctors, all of a sudden, we're going to see they're getting agitated and confused. And that's when the family is like, yeah, they drink a lot.
And if they tell them they drink a lot, they give them alcohol, right?
No, well, some do and some do not. But we do have an option to add alcohol to the trays just to keep the DTs and all of the withdrawal at bay. They do like to do what's called a CWA protocol that has a whole protocol in place of medications that control the withdrawal symptoms. But oftentimes it gets so bad they have to go to the ICU because they're so out of it. So he's also dealing with this alcohol withdrawal during his hospital stay. He was then, when he was discharged from the hospital, he was transferred to a rehab center. And on top of his injury, Tom suffered from underlying conditions such as heart disease, liver problems. He had a pacemaker, just not in the best of health.
Yeah, not a super healthy guy.
So during Tom's stay at the hospital and rehab after his accident, 37-year-old Jade headed over to Tom's. Of course, I'm saying she serves as his caregiver in a lot of instances. So she went over to Tom's house to help him by cleaning it so that when he was discharged from rehab, he would be coming home to a clean house.
That's nice.
So it was December 23rd, 2020, and Jade moved on to clean Tom's home office, and she stumbled upon photos on his computer that shocked her to the core.
Uh-oh.
So she busied herself around his desk, and she must have knocked the computer mouse because the computer had previously been asleep. This woke it up, which allowed her to see the monitor that featured a screensaver photo of a woman's breasts.
Okay.
And as Jade continued to view the photo, she realized in horror that she was actually looking at a photo of her own breasts.
Oh, man.
After she noticed a birthmark that she herself had on her chest.
That sucks. I mean, I was kind of thinking in the back of my head, this sounds like a weird relationship a little bit, even though, I mean, you don't want to think that, but I was wondering if there was something going on. And there's not.
There wasn't.
As far as she's concerned.
From her standpoint, there wasn't.
Yeah.
So she quickly logged onto the computer and soon discovered hundreds of nude photos of herself.
Wow.
As she continued clicking through photo after photo, she realized that many of the hundreds of photos of herself, had even been taken when she was under 18 years old. Ugh. They had been taken from her laptop. So they were sorted into folders with explicit names based on the body part that was featured in that photo.
Wow.
Jade realized that most of the photos had been taken consensually with former partners, but never, ever shared with anyone.
Really?
She could not wrap her head around how Tom had gotten access to the photos, but she assumed that he had gotten access through her computer, so she probably left her laptop sitting out at some point, and he went through it.
Yeah.
And then she also had a missing digital camera, so she's guessing that that's how he got through these photos.
Creeper.
So Jade felt absolutely shell-shocked.
Yeah.
She felt violated and betrayed by what she uncovered that day, because she had viewed Tom as a father figure since she was 14 years old.
Yeah.
Again, she referred to him as dad. So I can't imagine how sick she must have felt when she saw this.
Yeah,
I mean, just terrible.
And let down. There's like every bad feeling all at once, like all rushing to your head.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, this person that I loved is like looking at me as a sex piece.
Yes.
Like, it's disgusting.
Yes. So she said that she was so sickened by the discovery that she couldn't even touch her own skin. She felt terrified to be alone, to use the bathroom, or to change her clothes. She felt like she needed someone to look out for her to ensure that she was safe. Jade texted a friend about what she'd found on Tom's computer and indicated that she was beyond freaked out and that she was unable to shower alone, since many of the photos that she saw on Tom's computer were of her in the shower. Because again, it was like a partner that she had been dating took these photos.
Yeah.
She said that she was vomiting at the idea of even looking at the shower. She told her friend that she was sleeping with a knife in her nightstand just in case Tom was released early from the hospital. A little over a week after Jade made the shocking discovery, it was New Year's Day, 2021, and police at the San Diego County Sheriff's Department received a call from a man named Adam Siplak. He explained that his friend and former girlfriend, Jade Jenks, may have possibly killed her stepdad. So this is where police are now getting involved.
Okay.
So Adam explained to the dispatcher that Jade had called him over to her house the night before, which was New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2020, and confessed that she had killed her stepfather. She asked him if he could help her move the body. She said that she drugged him, she suffocated him, and then strangled him to death.
Wow.
Adam said that he had no idea what truly happened. He had not actually seen Tom's body. He couldn't confirm if what she was saying was true.
Sure, just hearsay, just what she's telling him.
Mm-hmm. So soon after she made this request, she basically just wanted help to move his body. He refused and he left. He quickly left. Adam said that he barely slept the night before as he tossed and turned over what to do with the information he was given. And then he ultimately made the decision to call police to tell them what she had said happened.
I mean, honestly, probably a good move.
So what police started to do was they began contacting friends and family members of Tom to see, hey, have you seen Tom Merriman? And nobody had. The last time Tom had been seen alive was on New Year's Eve, December 31st, when neighbors Ramona and George Hamilton saw him in Jade's SUV on the shared driveway. George said that Tom was sitting in the passenger seat with his feet out. There was a walker in front of him, and he elaborated that Tom looked like absolute hell. And Ramona agreed with the statement. She said that she wasn't even sure if Tom recognized her at that moment that they saw him coming out of the car. Mm-hmm. It was her understanding, okay, he's coming out of the hospital, he's getting discharged, maybe he's got a lot of medication in his system.
Yeah, painkillers, and you just got out of it.
Right. So the next time Ramona and George saw Jade, she was by herself. It was the following day, New Year's Day 2021. Jade was standing in the driveway by herself amongst a pile of trash and boxes. George said that a short time later, he heard a knock on the door. When he opened the door, it was Jade. And she had said that, oh, you know, I'm really sorry. I made a mess out on the driveway because, again, it's a shared space. I promise you, I will clean it up. And, you know, George is like, sure, that's fine. And then hours later, they saw law enforcement arrive. So on January 1st, 2021, officers arrived for a welfare check because, of course, they're starting out by calling around. Have you seen Tom? Okay, no, we haven't. So now they're going to Tom's house to see what they could find. So they immediately saw that Jade was driving away. So they pulled her over. They asked her to come to the station to answer questions. Jade willingly came, and she explained that she'd picked Tom up from rehab. She was unaware of where he was at that moment. At that point in time, she then asked for a lawyer. She refused to speak further. She was allowed to go home, but there was still no sign of Tom. So hours later, police returned with a search warrant, and they were able to search Jade and Tom's apartments, but saw no sign of Tom. They spent hours just combing his apartment for any kind of clues as to what could have happened to him. And then as the sun rose on January 1st, 2021, I'm sorry, this is January 2nd, my bad. Pardon me.
Way off.
Yeah, I know. I'm ridiculous. So now that the sun's rising, because initially when they responded to the scene, it was dark. Now they have a little bit more light to work with and to see their surroundings. It was just about 7 a.m. and an officer was walking down the driveway towards Tom's apartment. He noticed a pile of trash amongst a wheelbarrow. On closer inspection, they saw the silhouette of a body, and this is where they found Tom's body wrapped in a blanket and covered with trash, tools, and a stack of empty cardboard boxes smack dab in the middle of the driveway area between Jade and Tom's two homes.
Oh, not too far at all.
And again, this is where George, the neighbor, said that he saw Jade standing amongst all this garbage. She came to him and said, don't worry about it. I'm going to clean it up. Mm-hmm. Well, now Never we did. Know what that garbage was hiding.
Yep.
So he was still wearing the hospital bracelet as well as the t-shirt and pajamas that he wore on the day that he was discharged from the rehab center. And Jade was immediately arrested and charged with her stepfather's murder.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not too sad about it because he's a complete scumbag. But at the same time, you can't just go around killing people.
You cannot. So Jade pleaded not guilty, but evidence, however, painted a clear picture that she was responsible for Tom's death. When investigators unlocked Jade's phone, they found her text messages, which gave a full timeline of her murder plot and its execution.
She's like, okay, now I'm going to kill him. Okay, now I'm suffocating him.
So they found messages between Jade and a man. He's a freelance security guard. His name is Alan Roach. She met him through a friend on Facebook. Jade first reached out to Alan on the day that she actually discovered the nude photos of herself. That was December 23rd. In one message, he wrote, if you have a problem, I can fix it for you. And because of this, the prosecutors decide to refer to Alan as the fixer. It reminds me of Wreck-It Ralph.
That's so funny. I totally pictured the fixer in my head.
Oh, really?
I don't know why.
Oh, yeah. That's so funny. I thought of Fix-It Felix, if you've ever watched Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
So again, as they're referring to him to describe what his role was in this case to the jury, they were calling Alan the fixer. So police discover that in reality, Alan Roach was not a hitman, but rather a man that makes himself out to be somebody that he is not.
We all kind of know people like that.
It's like, no, Alan, no, you're just a security guard. It's okay.
Yeah, it's probably better that way, honestly.
And not just a security guard. No. I don't mean to say that as a disparaging comment to security guards.
Honestly, probably better to be a security guard rather than a person that gets rid of people.
Yes, I'm glad that Alan is not actually a hitman.
Right.
So Jade's trial began on December 21st, 2022, just about a year after, or 2 years after, my math, two.
Yep.
Yes. So Jade maintained that she had nothing to do with Tom's murder, and his death was just simply a result of his own poor health and the use of off-label prescription drugs.
Ah, interesting. Interesting aspect.
Stance.
Okay.
So Jade maintained that she only contacted Alan Roach so that he could be there when she brought Tom home, so that she's confronting Tom and he's there to back her up. So that's what she is saying Alan Roach's role was in this whole thing.
Okay.
She said that she only wanted Tom to just go away and leave her alone. She did not want him to die. Jade explained that on December 1st, in spite of her feelings, she was still doing everything that she could do to help Tom. Tom began calling her at 6:45 a.m. that day. He seemed very preoccupied with medication, saying that he needed to get codeine. When she got him from the rehab just a little after 11 a.m., he had a large bag of medications with him. This included Ambien. As soon as Tom got into Jade's car, she said that he began helping himself to both his medication and whatever medication Jade just happened to have in her car. I don't know what kind of prescriptions a 37-year-old would have in her car, but apparently he started helping herself to those.
Well, it's kind of like an all-you-can-eat buffet. He's just like, all right, where are we going to start here? Some Ambien, a little bit of codeine, a little bit of this.
Yeah, it's like a little buffet of narcotics and sleep aids.
Ibuprofen? Sure, why not?
It's 11 a.m. Let's get high.
Yeah.
So Jade then stopped at a shopping plaza. This is when she texted Alan to come to meet her. She went to a couple of stores while she waited for Alan to text her back. She said that she had recently started a house project, so she was just picking up some supplies that she needed. This included gloves, towels, a nylon cord, and some spray paint.
Well,
some might say these are some suspicious ingredients.
You might need some of those things.
You might.
Well, you never know.
I don't know what kind of nylon cord you use, but hey.
You need to tie things down.
I am not an interior decorator.
Especially if you're hauling junk.
So when Jade did not hear back from Alan, she decided to take Tom home. She said that when they arrived back to their house, Tom was too groggy to walk to get out of the car, so she drove him back to rehab for help. But she got there and she explained that, it's COVID, it's the heart of COVID still, and they would not allow her to come back in. So she basically took Tom back home. She still couldn't get him out of the car. And in the meantime, Alan texted her back and said that he couldn't come, but he would send his friend to help her. And this is a man named Brian Solomon. She had never met Brian before. And when he arrived, he basically said he couldn't help her and he left right away. This was when she called her friend Adam. We know Adam is the one that called 911, and why the police are even on this case at this point was because of Adam.
I picture this Brian guy coming over being like, Jade's like, oh, I'm so glad you can help. He's like, yeah, actually, no, I can't. All right, well, see you later.
Well,
it's like it putters away.
See you later.
Yep.
So she said when Adam came over, she was tearful and she said she just needed to get Tom into the house. Adam got upset and left, according to Jade. And this, of course, does not line up with what Adam told police happened. Jade claims that she never confessed to killing Tom to Adam, and Adam was only distressed by how Tom looked. He looked so sick that he got upset and left. And this is why he wouldn't help her. So Jade is saying that Adam's story is a complete lie. She never, ever, ever said she needed help moving a body, that she confessed to strangling him, etc.
There's a big difference between those two stories. And that's probably why Adam came clean, because she's like, okay, what I'm going to do with the cops is this. And he's like, actually, I'm going to go to the cops.
Not going to be any part of this mess.
I'm getting in front of this one.
So Jade explained to the jury that when they arrived home, she was just simply unable to get him out of the car because he was so sedated from self-medicating. Jade said that she left Tom in the car to sleep off his medications. She made sure that he was comfortable. She provided him with a pillow and a blanket. And then she herself kind of just went about herself her night. She fell asleep. When she checked on him on New Year's Day in the morning, she said she tried to pull his leg from the car. This is when the leg of his pajama pants lifted and she felt just how cold his skin was. And then this was when she realized that the worst had happened and Tom was dead. She explained that despite the fact that he was deceased, she continued to try to get him into his house. Mm-hmm. So she began to panic at this point. She wrapped him in a blanket. She piled things around him so that it looked like a pile of debris on the driveway. When asked why she hadn't just called 911 if he had died in his sleep in the car, she said that she was scared that she would be blamed for his death.
Yeah.
Of course, the police were aware of the fact that according to Adam, Jade had drugged and then strangled Tom to death.
But by her own admission.
Yes, to Adam. So a plastic bag was found in Jade's car. It contained her DNA on the outside and Tom's on the inside.
Mm, that's not good for Jade.
Yeah. So it's believed that she used this as an attempt to suffocate Tom. It's then theorized that the bag, was taking too long. So she moved on to manually strangle Tom to death. However, when they did an autopsy, there were no finding whatsoever of strangulation.
Ooh, interesting.
So they couldn't prove. What about suffocation?
Isn't that the same as different?
When they're looking for signs of strangulation on an autopsy, they're looking for trauma to the neck area, bruising. Sometimes, like, is it the hyoid bone gets broken from the pressure? However, they found none of this. And what they ruled Tom's cause of death was acute zolpidem intoxication. And zolpidem is a generic name for the sleeping pill Ambien.
Oh.
So, however, the prosecution pointed out that Jade was lying to cover up the fact that she had drugged and suffocated Tom, since when they did a DNA analysis of Tom's Ambien prescription, his fingerprints and DNA were not on the pack at all. Mm. It was just Jade's.
Okay.
So she said he got in the car from rehab and he had the bag of pills with him and he started to go to the buffet.
The pill
Your
buffet.
Your mom says that sometimes, I think. Yeah. The buffet.
I'm like, no, it's a buffet.
Yeah. So this is what Jade's saying, that he helped himself to his pills and began self-medicating, but that does not line up by the evidence. The evidence only found her DNA on the pill package.
It's more like Dumb and Dumber, where they're like, pills are good. Pills are good. Just why don't you eat up and we'll tell you.
Yes. So when the prosecution was questioned as to how you can prove that Jade had strangled Tom, when the autopsy, found no findings of strangulation, they pointed out the fact that if a person is sedated, if they are, what's the word I was using, incapacitated, as she said Tom was, she said he was so groggy and out of it, she could not get him out of the car, and the neighbors, Ramona and George, confirmed this fact. He was exceptionally out of it. So when a person is in this state, they're going to be sedated. They're not going to be fighting back. They can very easily have their airway cut off without finding any kind of signs of strangulation on an autopsy. Mm. And they basically reinforce this point by saying that it would only take 4 points of pressure to cut off the blood supply to Tom's head, which is less than a pressure it would take to in a handshake. So a typical handshake, they say, is about 11 pounds of pressure. So about a third of that amount of pressure.
4 pounds of pressure.
Yes. Four pounds of pressure to cut off the blood supply to somebody's head when they're already passed out and incapacitated.
So it's kind of like checking for your pulse, basically. Like that's kind of
It's very light.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. So she could have absolutely strangled him to death and they wouldn't have seen it in the autopsy. Mm. They showed that the motive was Jade's rage after discovering the nude photos of herself on Tom's computer.
Now, I was going to ask you, did they bring that up in the trial of her finding the nude photos?
Yeah, the photos were definitely discussed. They were basically trying to get to the point of like,
did you
guys also have like a strange relationship? They were asking her a bunch of questions like, did you share these photos? And she's like, no. And they're like, did you guys have a sexual relationship in nature? And she's like, no, he was my dad. So yes.
It's really interesting. I mean, yeah, you don't know for sure. I'm not going to try to assume anything, but there's a couple of things where it's like, yeah, it's weird how attached she is.
Yeah, I guess. But she knew him since the time she was 14 years old. Sure. She's 37 at this point.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's anything weird about that.
No, definitely not.
So prosecutors used Jade's text messages as a clear path to prove premeditation. So that was the ticket. Because they couldn't prove that she actually strangled him as she so-called confessed to Adam, that's what they had to focus on. And the fact that her DNA was found on the pill package versus Tom's. So they were focusing on these texts, which to them showed premeditation, planning, and murder. The text that was very critical was a text that Jade sent to Alan Roach at 11:30 a.m. right after she had picked Tom up from rehab. And she wrote, "I just dosed the hell out of him."
Ooh, that's a tough one to get over.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
So the prosecution pointed out that a text of this nature, well, I mean, what does a text of that nature mean to you, Mike? What did she do?
Dosed him.
She gave another person a lot of drugs.
Yeah, I mean, dose, that's really the only thing you can take out of that one.
So her response to that was, it was just simply poor phrasing.
What did you really mean, Jade? Poor phrase? What?
Just poor phrasing. Well,
I would be like, okay, absolutely understandable. So what did you really mean?
What did you mean? What?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That just meant that I was driving him home. It's like, in no way does that mean anything but mm-hmm. giving somebody drugs.
So in her next text, she said she was stopping at Dixieland, this is a shopping plaza, to stall, which was understood that she was just buying time while the drugs would kick in and thus make Tom fall asleep. At 12:39 p.m., about an hour later, she texted, "I can't carry him either back to my car or to his house. I'm not strong enough. Can you come, like, right now?" At 2:59 p.m., she texted that Tom was waking up and she wasn't sure how long she could control her temper. At 4:12 p.m., she texted, "BTW, he is waking up and getting way more aggressive." At 4:28 p.m., she said, "He is super medicated. I can't keep a kicking body in my truck." At 4:30 p.m., she said, "He's waking up. I'm about ready to club him." And at 4:35 p.m., she says, "He's very aware and I'm on my own." As the day wore on, the texts just continued to get more and more desperate in nature. She agreed that these text messages could appear very suspicious, but they weren't.
She's like, "I know what you're saying, but no, it's all mm-hmm. good. I mean, I wasn't really going to club him or suffocate him or give him lots of drugs to hope he dies."
Right. So the last text she sent to Alan Roach was at 5:33 p.m. on January 1st, 2021. This is when she was pulling out of the driveway as the police arrived to Tom and Jade's place so that they could do a welfare check on him and, you know, start their investigation there. And they were pulling her over to speak with her. She sent a text to Alan Roach that read, "Lose my number, I'm getting pulled over." So prosecutors also believe that the items Jade purchased for her so-called home improvement project was actually a murder kit. Hmm. It was clear to prosecutors that Jade's plan began to crumble as she panicked when Tom began to wake up and Alan still had not come over. Alan told her he would not be coming. Again, he sent his friend Brian Solomon, and that, you know, he was going to, the nature of the text was that he was going to step in because Alan was unable to do so, to bring Tom into the house. Brian said that when he arrived, Jade told him, "I want you to bring him inside, strangle him, and I will take care of the rest." Brian quickly left. He did not do anything.
He noped right out of there.
And he's like, nope, kind of like Adam. So the defense argues that it's highly unlikely that Jade would confess something of this nature to somebody that she had never met before. So, you know, her team's arguing there's no way she's going to say these words to somebody she does not know.
She's not stupid enough to do that. Also, she's not stupid enough to say that she dosed somebody in a text message.
So prosecutors say that Jade wanted Tom's death to appear to be an accidental overdose. But the problem is that she simply couldn't get his 180-pound body out of the car and into his house or apartment. She drove to a hospital when she realized that Tom was dead. This actually happened. He was in the back of her car. She picked up a wheelchair, she put it in her car, and drove back to Tom's, which is something, again, that she admitted to. She was questioned as to why, if you suspected he was dead, and she did. She said, "I knew he was dead. I guess I just didn't really want to know it." I heard those words come out of her own mouth. They said, "If you knew that he was dead, you're now at a hospital. Why did you not ask somebody for help at that point?"
It's a great spot for healthcare.
And she said she had no answer for that.
Okay.
So the prosecution's big concern was that the jury would dislike Tom Merriman enough to vote to acquit or to reduce her charges to something else.
For sure. That's why I asked if they brought up the pictures, because it's like the pictures, you know, definitely have a motive. That's, you know, that's why they needed to admit it. But at the same time, it's like it's not okay to kill somebody because they have naked pictures of you.
100%. So their goal was to keep the jury's attention focused on what Jade had done versus what Tom had done, with the keeping of the nude photos on his own computer with pictures of a stepdaughter without her knowledge or consent.
Well, sure. And the defense is the complete opposite. They want to make sure you're thinking about the naked pictures.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was their point that this was Jade's trial, not Tom's trial, because Tom didn't get a trial, because Jade was his judge, jury, and his executioner. There was never any doubt that Jade was telling the truth in regards to the photos that she had found on Tom's computer. The photo that was set at his wallpaper, they could tell had been there since August of 2019. They were unable to view any of the other photos that she said came up in, you know, the amount of like hundreds of them, because she destroyed the hard drive after she found them. But they were able to see the screensaver. So Jade explained the hundreds of nude photos that she'd found on her stepfather's computer and realized that he had been secretly collecting these images since she was as young as maybe even 16.
So they never saw any of these pictures?
They didn't see the hundreds that were in...
outside of the screensaver.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So she said because she viewed Tom as a father, she had suffered trauma and emotional distress for years over Tom's predatory behavior. However, her lawyers did not use this as a defense in court. Because it's kind of like you just said, even if you found disturbing photos, it's not a permission slip to kill somebody.
Right. But at the same time, if I'm a juror, I'm probably going to be a little lenient. She didn't go out of her way to, yeah, sympathetic, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So neither Adam Siplak, Brian Solomon, or Alan Roach were charged with anything in this case because they had all kind of just peaced out and done nothing. The defense argued that Adam's account about Jade's confession was just simply a lie. He had no credibility and only wanted to get out something that he thinks might have happened. However, there's two people that said the same thing.
Yeah, Brian, there's no reason for either of them to lie.
Brian said, "This is what she asked of me. I left." So now you have two separate people who do not know each other that are saying the same thing, in addition to the text with Alan Roach, in addition to the DNA on the bag in her car, in addition to the DNA on the Ambien pills.
Yeah, she definitely did it, in my opinion, you know, if I'm the jury member.
Yeah, that's a lot of evidence.
Yeah.
So before the trial concluded, the defense pointed out that there was zero evidence to support murder, while the prosecution focused on Jade's text that read, "I dosed the hell out of
him." Yeah, I'd be like, actually look at this text.
Yeah.
That's the evidence right there.
So there were two texts that they really focused on, the "I just dosed the hell out of him" text, as well as the "lose my number, I'm getting pulled over." Because she knew at that point that she should have never left that trail of text messages.
The jig is up.
Yeah. So the jury went out that afternoon. They were back the next morning to continue their deliberations. The jury came in at 9 a.m. and only 30 minutes later, they returned with a verdict.
Wow, that's like the quickest I've ever heard.
Yeah, and the prosecution said that in their experience, when a deliberation is that quick, it's normally just they're found not guilty. So they were nervous for sure. So what would you think that the jury came back with?
Guilty and like 7 years.
So the jury found Jade guilty of first-degree murder.
Yep.
She immediately turned toward her lawyer with an absolute stunned look plastered across her face. This photo is used in a lot of the images you see because she's like got her eyes bugged out. And it's like, yeah, well, don't kill people.
Yeah.
So they did not believe the claims that Jade had only planned on confronting Tom, and hence the reason why she established a relationship with this Alan Roach, because that's what she said. She's like, "I just wanted him there to help me out when I first confronted Tom about what I found on his computer." They weren't buying that, you know, rather than the fact that she actually murdered him. During her sentencing hearing, which was in March of 2023, Tom's family gave emotional victim impact statements to convey their grief and pain. They requested maximum justice for his brutal murder.
Yeah, at the same time, he's a complete scumbag. So would you want to be coming out and being like, "Oh, our sweet, like, you know, family member that had all these horrible pictures. Now, they didn't see them. You know, that's the problem.
They didn't see the hundreds, but they did see the one. And where there's one, there's, you know, bound to be more.
Yeah, but, the underage ones would have really kind of gotten to people if she would have kept them. You know, that's the tough one.
So a lot of people did come forward, and I mean, they absolutely love Tom. So he must have been hiding this really creepy part of him.
And I kind of hate to say it, but at the same time, he didn't act on it as far as we know. So, I mean, that's something, right? I mean, it's better than like,
well, I mean, sure, he didn't actually physically touch her, but that is so violent. 100%. And I can't imagine what she must have felt when she saw the breasts on the computer. In itself, I'd be like, ugh, like, you don't want to see that on your stepfather's computer as it is. And then you see the birthmark and you're like, oh my goodness, that's me.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how sick I would feel, so sick and violated, but you cannot murder people because you feel sick and violated.
Yeah.
So Jade was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. She will be eligible for parole when she is 64 years old. Incidentally, this is the same age Tom was when she murdered him.
Interesting.
Jade's biological father, this is Stephen Jenks, he came forward and wanted to put the focus back on Tom and what he did, what kind of betrayal he had done, and how it must have made Jade feel when she discovered that her stepfather, whom she trusted, was truly just a sick and perverted and twisted man. When Jade spoke, she talked about how Tom entered her life when she was just a young age, in her early stage of development, while she was still trying to figure things out. She said that this manifested into inappropriate touch, coercion, reckless behavior, and a complete violation of what she now realizes was years of psychological manipulation.
And that's not a complete surprise. Like, usually there's a trail and you're thinking back, you're like, wow, he was always very loving. And it's like, oh yeah, those playful taps and stuff. Right. Might have been more.
Well, and that's just the thing, because clearly he was looking at her as a sexual person rather than his stepdaughter, who you would never want to think of in a sexual way.
No.
So yeah, I think it really probably brought a lot to the surface of what, like you just said, those little touches that were not at all innocent.
Yeah.
So she said that, you know, when she found these nude photos of herself on Tom's computer, they absolutely shattered her. She says, I'm still picking up the pieces. It's my sincerest hope that over the next few years, I can put the pieces back and heal from this trauma. I'm sorry I didn't act the way I was supposed to that day. I think about it every day since. Jade does maintain, though, that she is innocent of murder. She is simply only guilty of hiding Tom's body after he died as a result of his own overdose.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably do the same. And if Jade, you know, if you hear this, I would probably continue doing that.
So the prosecution realizes that had Jade been able to carry out her plan as she wanted to, she would have gotten away with this.
Yeah.
And I think about that too. Like, had she just waited for him to get up into his apartment and then she fed him all the pills that she did and then did whatever she did to strangle him without any signs, all she would have done is say, call 911 and say, my stepfather's in here. He does not appear to be breathing. And
quick,
he was
and
not a healthy man. They wouldn't have been surprised by this.
We wouldn't be talking about it right now.
We certainly would not. It would have been an accidental death.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So Jade will be eligible for parole in 2038, and she is appealing her conviction. And that is the story of the murder of Tom Merriman.
I'll bet you she gets out earlier.
Possibly.
That's, I think people are going to look at it. Like, seven was a little light, but I guess like 10 25. To 12 to 13 years, I think would be about right. Still, I mean, she's capable of murder, which is, you know, allegedly, I guess. But yeah, you can't just go around killing people.
It was first degree murder, though. So that's, you know, going to be a stronger sentencing.
It's a big one, especially in 30 minutes of deliberation.
So it's funny because I went to her interior design page and it's on Facebook and like everyone's like, she was holding a sign in one of the photos, like, I can fix it for you or something like that. And they changed the text that's on the sign. They're like, hi, I hope you're decorating your jail cell nice and putting a lot of pictures of like the jail cell toilets on the page.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well,
so yeah, I found this to be an interesting case.
Very interesting. thanks for bringing it to us. I appreciate
it. Absolutely. I mean, it's never okay to kill somebody is really what it comes down to.
Yeah, folks, if you're listening and you're thinking of killing somebody, just don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Don't do it.
Yeah, if there's one thing we can teach you today, don't kill other people. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's just not worth it. You're going to spend a lot of time in jail. You're going to be away from your loved ones. It's not cool.
That's the takeaway message of this podcast today.
Yeah. Hey, if you enjoy the stories we bring you or learn something or, you know, just kind of genuinely enjoy our banter, whatever it might be, there's an opportunity to get more episodes through Patreon or Apple subscriptions. So go ahead and click our show notes and take a look at the link there. And I want to say welcome to the Crime and Coffee Couple Club to our latest members, Britannia, Amber, Lauren, Billy, Cynthia, Melanie, Sarah, Cher, and Tara. Thank you all so, so much for trusting us with your hard-earned money and helping this little Ma and Pa podcast. I'm Pa.
And I'm Ma.
So we really appreciate that. There's some big hitters out there in this podcast world, and we're just, you know, sputtering along, doing our best. Allison's, you know, got her ears cut open and trying to, you know, research all these opportunities.
Mike, what does my ear being cut open have to do with any of that?
I'm talking at the heartstrings is what I'm doing right now.
Oh, my goodness.
If I could play Sarah McLachlan in the background.
Of an angel, okay. Far away with the puppies on the screen where you just end up sobbing as you watch it.
Yeah, just think about Allison just, you know, trying to wash her head and stuff, and she's got like Vaseline all over her hair
the one strand of hair, easy for me to talk, by my ear is so saturated in Vaseline. I wash it and it just doesn't come out.
That's okay.
It's not good. There's scabs in my hair. It's just, it's not pretty. You try to kiss my like ear yesterday, forgetting.
Oh, I totally forgot.
And I was like, ah,
yeah,
you can't touch my back. Nope. Our daughter doesn't want to hug me because she's afraid she's going to hurt me.
Yeah. And our son, I mean, he has no idea what's going on. So he just comes in for a big hug and you're like, no, wait.
He's very sweet though. He texts me when I was on my way. He's like, you got your back thing. If you could handle the ear thing, because the doctor did say the ear and the nose is the worst place to have the procedure done that I had done, because there's so much inflammation and so little like skin to work with. He's like, the back will be nothing for you. And he's right. It's just a little sore, but yep. Sorry about my complaining. Wah, wah. There's a lot of people that have much worse going on in their lives.
That's okay. Hey, you don't want it. We all have our challenges. That's yours right now.
But we appreciate each and every one of you being here so much from the bottom of our hearts. We can't tell you enough.
Again, go subscribe on YouTube. Go check us out. Crime and Coffee Couple on YouTube.
Yeah. We're trying to beef up our YouTube page. Yeah. So thank you guys so much for being here. And until next time, bye.